thank you so much for having me real quick. Okay, just real fast. Who has been out to For the Nations? Anybody? Okay, perfect, perfect. The majority have not. So, you know, don't spoil anything. I love that I'm hearing the foam boiling down here as I'm talking. And the theme song that I walked up to, Ghostbusters, do you know the words to it? No, the first part. When there's something strange in the neighborhood, right? And so I love this intro song. Steve and I did not coordinate this, but this is what refugees are, right? Like they're strange, but they're in our neighborhood. So my name is Cameron Mullins, and let's see. My story starts really when I was about 21. Because my wife and I, we started dating in high school. Usually I don't start the story here when I'm 18, but honestly, like some of you, like you're just a year or two older than 18. And so we started dating as seniors in high school, and then we thought we'd break up. And so then I went to UTD and she went to A&M, and we said, we're going to break up. But then we were like, actually this isn't going so bad. And so we said, let's try this long distance. So right now, if you're dating someone long distance, watch out, because you might start a nonprofit with them someday. And so anyway, she graduated early. And so we actually got married. We would have been, if we had gone to Criswell, we would have been in the married housing. Is there married housing here? No. Good. We would have been in it senior year because apparently I'm a catch. And so she graduated early. And so then when we were 21, she started teaching at an elementary school. She got her degree in early education teaching kindergarten. And up in Richardson. Now, quickly, raise your hand. Do you know where Richardson is? Yes. Okay, perfect. More people than have been out to For the Nations. All right, great. Well, it's up north. So just, I don't know how good you are at directions. I have, again, 5 kids. Not all of them are good at directions. But just north, which direction is north right now? Okay, I see hands going every way. Yeah, that's right. Okay, good. So it's all up north kind of that we're talking about. But we're 21, and about and she was telling me stories of her class, and she's like, "This is really weird, because there's like 22 kids, but 16 of them don't speak English." And I'm like, "Well, that's not." She's like, "But they don't speak Spanish either." And it's like, "Well, that's weird. What language do they speak?" She's like, "I don't even know. I haven't even heard of some of these languages before." So a little girl named Sharifa came walking to class one day, and she had fallen down in a puddle. And that's when Caitlin said, "Hey," and it was cold outside. It was colder than today. Had fallen down in a puddle, accompanied only by her first grade sister. And she goes, "Hey, I think I'm going to buy her a jacket and take it to her house." And so she goes and she buys a jacket. She takes it there, and then when she gets to the apartment, it's filled with all of this family. And it's not just there's not just 2 kids. These 2 kids are the oldest, but there's 7 children in this house already. And they're in this apartment, but as she goes up, everyone else starts asking, like, or all these little heads start popping out of apartments saying, "Miss Mullins is here, Miss Mullins is here." So then she goes and she does some research to find out, like, what's going on. And so in doing the research, she then comes busting into our 1-bedroom apartment. She goes, "Cameron, guess what? They're refugees." To which then my first response, and this is close to 20 years ago, my first response was, "Oh no, do we need to report them to the government?" Because, and she lovingly said, "No, you idiot, that's not what a refugee is." And I said, "Well, what is a refugee?" And we didn't really know the answer back then, but the answer was a refugee is a permanently resettled person who is an invited guest by our government to come to America. By the way, this is just all the pre-setup for the real story. We learned more about it. There was lots of things I didn't know about refugees at the time. So let me just clue you in, and unfortunately, I wish I didn't have to say this, by this quick clue in right here to refugees, you're going to know more than 99% of people about refugees. So just give me one hot minute. All right, so refugees, the program started in the 1970s after the Vietnam War, when lots of Vietnamese people jumped on boats and they came over to America. And so then there's all these Vietnamese families that were initially adopted by like Catholic churches, which is why today there's lots of Catholic Vietnamese churches. And so then the government kind of stepped in the early 80s to say, hey, this is really kind of unregulated. We are not quite sure who's being helped and why. So we're going to start what's called the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And what the Office of Refugee Resettlement does is that they said, hey, we have money for anyone that will bring people over, but they have to be a verified organization. And when the government says they have money to do something, there will always be people that pop up to say, we will take that money. And so so these organizations started, and they had just a few requirements. They had to bring them over, like in an airplane, refugees over, and the refugees were in refugee camps. Now, just real quick, because I don't have tons of time, and it's not that complicated to think of, but real quick, these refugee camps, what state do we live in? Thank goodness. Okay, great. I don't always get the right answer to those. So we're in Texas, that's right. And imagine that anyone, that the rest of the United States says, hey, we're coming to take you over. We actually don't think, if you've lived in Texas or even know a Texan or have ever said y'all, we actually don't like you anymore. And so the rest of America says, hey, we're coming to take your land and take your, we'd rather you die, but you got to get out of here. So the rest of America is coming. So we're here in Dallas. Where do we run? Or what do we do? Some of us might say, hey, I'm going to go fight. But that's very few of us. Because most of us are like, oh, wait, how many are against us? The rest of America? I'm out of here. So then we're in Texas. Where do we run? Where? Mexico. Good. Some people say Canada. And then it's like, there's a lot of land you got to get through. You might make it, but it's going to be tough. And then some people say Oklahoma. And I'm like, you didn't understand the entire question to begin with. Okay, and so they go to Mexico, and there in Mexico, let's just say hypothetically, does Mexico there's now like, I don't know, 20 million Texans that just showed up in Mexico. Does Mexico want to bring us all the way into like the center of their country? No. So they're going to call up the United Nations and say, we got a problem. There's all these Texans here. We don't have money or resources for them. This is a big issue. UN, can you please help us? UN says, no problem. We're going to send you money. And you get to make some temporary places for these people. Okay, and so where would you build these temporary places for us Texans coming in? Okay, so would you want us to cut all the way across your country to get there? No, so you're going to build these temporary places as close as you can to the border. And then all of us Texans that get there, we're going to get there, and then we're going to sign up with them, and we're going to sit, and we're going to wait and so the refugees that are sitting in the refugee camps, what are they waiting for? Sorry, I love crowd participation. I can't help myself. What? Housing. Okay, good. They want housing, but it's there, like the housing is there and some water is there. What are they wanting? What would you be wanting? What? Citizenship. Are you desperately looking for a Mexican citizenship right now? No. I'm always surprised, and it took me many years to figure out this answer. What everybody, and we would want it too, you just left your car and your money and your language and all the skills that make us valuable to go to college, to get jobs. You just had to leave all of that behind. Now you're in a completely new area where you can't speak, you can't talk, you don't have any access to your bank accounts. And what everybody is wanting is, have you seen the movie Sound of Music? It's old. Have you seen it? Okay, great. There's a last line at the end where Liesl turns to Maria and says, when do we get to go back home? If you had to run away from everything, and especially if you were kids and your parents were saying, don't worry, it's just going to be for a moment, just for a moment. We're just going to go over here. We have to leave everything behind. We're just going to stay here until this fighting stops, until all these problems go away. Like, and then don't worry, we're going to get to go back. We're going to get to go back. So you go and you sit and you wait. And as you're waiting, you hope for the fighting to stop or the problem to go away. But after enough time, after 6 months, after a year, after 5 years, after 35 years, this is when someone finally may have to come to you and say, like, this is where finally internationally it's declared, we're so sorry, but the house that you had, the car that you had, is gone. It was taken. The bank account you had was drained. like the school you went to doesn't exist anymore. There's no certificate. Like there's everything that you had is gone. We're so sorry, but there's nowhere to go back to. So 99% of refugees will either go back into their home country or they will immigrate into the country. They will then say, okay, well, I guess I'll become a citizen of Mexico if Mexico allows that, if the country they run into allows that. Or 1% will be specifically hand-chosen by government and invited over to those countries, to more stable third countries like Australia, like England, or like the United States. And so from the beginning of the 1980s, America has brought over about 100 to 150,000 refugees every year. From what country? From all the countries we wouldn't want to visit in Africa and the Middle East and Asia. And so that's where it's like, so they're not running out of America. If they were running out of Somalia, they might run to Kenya. If they were running out of Iraq, they might run to Turkey. If they were running out of Burma, they might run to Malaysia. And all these places have refugee camps. Okay, so you get like the idea of the refugee camp, what they're there for. They're also meant to be temporary. They're not meant to be long-term cities. And so things like schooling and education and these things, it starts to just kind of evaporate and disappear. I didn't know any of that when my wife comes home when I'm 21 saying, hey, guess what? They're refugees. And so because of that, I said, do we need to report them? Unaware of that entire process that brought them there. All right. So if you know that story of how refugees are and that they are legal and permanent, I'm so sorry, but this puts you in a top type of upper 1% to 5% of who actually knows that information. And now you'll have to deal with that information the same way I've had to. I wasn't asking for it, but just fell into it. All right, so, okay, so then we're 21. She starts helping some kids. What she realized is that these kids are already so far behind. They don't know the language. They don't know these things. So she starts having a class after school to help them in her public school up in Richardson. And so then the kids start coming just to learn their letters, shapes, colors, numbers, all the things that we teach our kids that you were taught that none of us have to pay for. We were all just taught it. Okay, and so then the weird thing is parents started to show up to this after-school class. Again, this is about 20 years ago. To this after-school class, and they would bring all these papers, and it was just whatever they had gotten in the mail, and they're like, boom, what is this? She's like, well, this is a credit card bill. You shouldn't have credit cards. You probably shouldn't have credit cards either, but we tell the refugees that. Here's your credit card bill. This one is a scam. This is your Social Security card. You got to keep that. This one's a Pizza Hut advertisement. So just kind of going through their mail. But then also what happened was that all of these parents were bringing all of these younger kids because who America chooses to come over is usually stable family units. And so that's why the idea of the solo refugee that's coming to take over or something like that, I don't know where this idea came from, but it's just not who America brings over. We bring over stable family units most of the time, people with education. It's the cream of the crop. She sees all these younger kids and she goes, you know what? We're going to have a preschool for these kids over the summer. And she and I, we didn't have any kids at that time. And what we didn't know now is that we had all the time in the world. So we could just spend summers because once you have children, you will have no time. This is some of the most time you'll ever have, which is why when a college kid says to me, I'm so busy right now, I just say, gosh, bless your heart. So then she starts having a preschool, but she comes to me and she goes, hey, we're going to teach letters, shapes, colors, numbers to these preschoolers. She goes, but I'm also going to teach stories about Jesus. And I'm like, when? And she's like, every day. Now, I was in seminary across the street over here. And about half of these people were from Christian countries. About half were from Islamic countries. And what do you think I said to her when she said, I'm going to teach about Jesus to these little preschoolers? What do you think I said? Uh-oh. I said, I don't know if that's such a good idea. I think that they're going to get pretty mad at you because we're told we're not supposed to talk about things like that. And if you do, people will run away. You got to be sensitive to these things. So anyway, she goes, it'll be fine. They talk about God all the time. So she did. And at the end of the summer, she goes, well, Cameron, the moms all came up to me and they got really mad at me. And I'm like, Well, I'm not surprised because you were teaching them about Jesus and sending home like all these crafts and telling stories. She goes, no, no, no. They were mad because they said, Miss Mullins, why are you doing all these things for our children? Why don't you do them for us as well? I know. I was surprised too. Okay, so then she's like, so we got to start doing this. Let's move out of our one bedroom and start renting a house in the area. Now, if you haven't noticed, you and I, during this story, are kind of taking a third-person view to this. We're not making these amazing decisions of let's go help this person. We're kind of watching here from the side, and to some degree, we just have a ministry of yes, where it's like, okay, so let's go rent a house in the neighborhood that they live in. And then, and so then it's like, boy, I sure like the area that kind of we're in. It's a lot nicer than that. Okay, let's do it. Let's jump. And so we started renting a house. And so then one evening a week, about 8 women would come over to our house. Actually, she and I would have to go around and drive and pick some people up to bring them where they would learn English and learn Bible stories. And it was so, if you walked in and you saw that room, you'd say, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. 8 women from all mainly from Africa at that time. But they're all like learning English and bettering themselves, and they're getting to hear about Jesus, many of them for the first time, because what I was confused of was I kind of thought, oh, they were given a choice at some point of what to believe. And the answer was, no, they weren't. They were told one specific thing and told, if you even go and research outside of this, we'll kill you, or we'll ostracize you, or you won't be part of our family. So what education and learning about Jesus is actually giving people opportunities to say, hey, actually, let me tell you something. Let me tell you where my faith and my hope is. And what we actually get to tell them during this time is, hey, in America, I know you were looking for safety. I know you were looking for an easy life. And the truth is, neither of those are here. What your heart was actually looking for, and what God has brought you all the way across the ocean to hear, is that Jesus loves you and that he cares about you just as much as he cares about me. And that the thing that you were looking for the whole time was not America, is that it's actually Jesus. And it's the same thing that we're looking for here. So let me tell you about the hope that we have in him. And let me tell you about that not just once, but literally every time I see you. Okay, so if you looked into the one room, you'd see that. But then if you looked over here to the dining room, you would have seen 20 children going crazy because it's all the children of the 8 women. And so 20 is an understatement. And so that's where we had to start asking some friends, like, oh my gosh, these kids are going crazy. Can you please come and just hang out in my house in the dining room one evening a week with them? Now, of course, I was in seminary at this time. So I would come in with my little briefcase. Yeah, I had a briefcase. I'd come in with my little briefcase. I'd look over. I'd see the women in there. I'd say, aw. I'd see the kids over there with some of our friends just going like, and I'd be like, yeah, like, boy, that seems busy. And I'd be like, I got to go study. Because, you see, I had a plan. I was an associate youth pastor at an upper middle class church here in Dallas, and I was on a track. And that track made sense. I got good grades. I was in seminary. I was doing everything I needed to do. I had connections and things like this. I had a plan of what I was going to do. And this, even though, while cool, was not a part of what my plan was for what was going on. So then I would go back to my room at this time and study and read and do all the things that, you know, like I'm supposed to do, right? Like to get to the next stage that I needed to get to. All right, so then one evening a week, kids would walk over and we'd just pop open our garage and kids would come walk in and we'd help them with homework. And they'd be told, like in a Bible story, they'd hear a Bible story. And then also like we'd give them a snack during it, and we were in the neighborhood so they could get to us. All right, kind of simple, and it would have just stayed there as a hobby, except, and to now shorten this, as I'm always doing, the older I get, the longer I talk. And so then the 8 women became 15, which became 20, which became 30. The kids, to such a degree that one time there weren't enough spots, and so a fight broke out at our house. And that's when Caitlin came to me and said, hey, guess what? I got to quit my job. And I said, I don't know if you heard earlier, but I'm in seminary and I'm a part-time associate youth pastor. How exactly are you going to quit your job? And she goes, I'm just going to raise support, just like a missionary does. And I said, I don't think that's such a good idea. And she goes, I don't think it'll be a problem. And so then in about 3 months, she had raised her support. And her school, she became a bridge between the refugee community. And I said, and so then we started doing these programs like afterwards, and I was kind of watching, and there was one evening I kind of came out and I said, Caitlin, you know, you really need a guy who can help you because you're really helping women and children, and there's all these men, and she had this dinner in this apartment complex, all these men came out, and I was like, you got to find someone who can help you with this. And I was like, I'll be praying for you, like, to find this person, because it's clearly a need, and it's clear right there. And then this guy named Malo, I just saw him 2 days ago, a guy named Malo goes, hey, Mr. Mullins, how's your family? And for some reason for me, that's when it hit, oh, I can do this. It's literally right here. I know I had these stories of like, yeah, this is this thing that you're doing and it's super cool and I approve of it and yay and go you. I'll even tell other people about you. But this idea of like, but I have plans, but the need is right here. And so this is actually what I probably shouldn't call you Bobby from the stage, but this is what Bobby and I, is that there are needs all around us, but we have plans and we have goals. And those are great. Like I'd be concerned if someone's like, I have no plans or goals for the future. It's like, okay, like maybe you should. Like it's great to have plans and goals, but at the same time, there are needs all around you. And part of, maybe you're like my wife and, I just had to censor a whole lot of jokes. Maybe you're like my wife. Maybe you're always jumping in and like trying new things and doing new things and pushing against walls. Maybe you're like that. But maybe you're more like me. And you're like, I had plans, but I can see this need right there. And if you're more like me, what I hope that you hear this morning and that you think about as you're going through your education process and these things is saying, okay, but I can't forget to look up and look at like, but what's actually going around right around me? What are the needs that are in my community right now? Not the needs I just know of or the needs I even see on paper, but what's actually going on right beside me that maybe I can step into, even though like I'm not the most equipped. I don't know anything about refugees. People say, how many languages do you speak? And I say, not that many. Like I only speak English. So just don't be scared to take those steps. I mean, and if you're not scared enough to wear a Halloween costume like many of you are today, then I hope you continue this passionate desire of going into communities to change them. All right, so just to fast forward to the very end. So currently today, it became more and more, and then other people started calling us saying, hey, we want to come work with you. And we're like, what? Like, you have to raise your own support. We ended up starting our own nonprofit in 2011 because we were looking for, like, what can we let that lets us mix both education and evangelism together and helping both old and young people all the time. And there just wasn't anything that existed. And so we started our own nonprofit in 2011. And currently today, I think we're going to serve about 850 people today. And we do that on about a daily basis, providing adult education, teaching English 4 days a week, 45 minutes of English, 20 minutes of Bible, 45 minutes of English, which means that for 32 weeks of the year for adults, which means our adults get to hear the gospel 128 times over the course of a year. We still run about 40% Islamic. And then we provide childcare and preschool for the kids as the adults are in classes. And then over the summer, we'll serve about 650 to 700 children a day. And after school, we'll serve about 100 a day. But after school, doing homework and then also learning reading. But none of it is any different than what the original thing was, which is just like, oh, I can help. Like, I have my degree in theology, not early education. And so if you have early education or thinking about education, boy, do I got an idea for you.